About the situation of Tibetan medicine in Europe. Oops, it's going on automatic. And then on our work at Padma Corporation in Switzerland. And finally, I want to talk about three strategies, what we can do to improve the status of Tibetan medicine in Europe. Or let's say it's three suggestions. Before I start, I want to give you my background. I'm a trained physicist. From Vienna, Austria, and I worked with interdisciplinary research project. And since the early 1990s, I'm working with PADMA, with Tibetan medicine in Switzerland. And also I want to stress that my topic is on the situation in Europe, so I have nothing to offer directly to the situation in Asia. I just can talk about what I know, where I live, and I live in Europe. Here you see the situation, how many doctors we have in Europe, just a few of them. You see the red dots? So not very much. 350 million people live in Europe. And when you imagine that you have maybe 10, maybe 20, maybe 30 Tibetan practitioners working, so that's not really, you cannot imagine that a lot of people have contact to a Tibetan doctor. The same is true if you look how are Tibetan practitioners or those who are interested in Tibetan medicine, are there schools for Tibetan medicine or is there anything happening on this side, may it be for doctors or Western trained practitioners or those who want to start to work with Tibetan medicine from scratch. So there are a few institutions working there. A lot are centered in German speaking countries, and some of Sonja Maric is here. From Bad Homburg, from Germany, and Dr. Dava from the Menzikang in Dharamsala, they have an outpost in Hüttenberg in Austria. Another thing to consider when we talk about Tibetan medicine in Europe, we are in the field of complementary medicine. Sometimes this is forgotten when we talk about Tibetan medicine here in the Asian context, because in Europe, it's just one of those many fields of alternative medicine. And this is the same when you see this, I try to visualize this, you see this different colors, and now you see, I try to visualize this in the whole field of medicine, where it's just a niche. It's just, yesterday we heard how big the market is. In fact, the market of alternative medicine in Europe is small. The pharmaceutical industry takes up about 10, 20, 30% of the gross domestic product. So, and complementary medicine is just 1 or 2, 2% of the whole market. So we have one of the problems of getting, of work against, sometimes against, but sometimes with the orthodox medicine. And the future of this should be the integrative medicine. Then we have a very strict regulatory framework. The one is centered around GMP. This is, of course, this is guarded and supervised by the national agencies from the different countries. Switzerland is outside the EU, but anyway, these agencies are all very strict and very stringent. And sorry for this, that the slides always pop up. Something is automatic here. And then we have also the field of CITES, which is the regulation of the import of endangered species in Europe. And unlike other countries in Europe, this CITES treaty is actually very much in force. So it's a very strict regime on CITES in Europe. So we have to import, of course, everything with the proper documentation and so on. Another, if we want, how are the authorities working? And so I tried to sum up how they are working. And I think one of the things the authorities want, they want no risk. It means they want safe products. In considering Rinch and Rilbus, they don't want metals, they don't want animal products. They want known ingredients. So this gives one of the problems with non-European herbs. The authorities have no idea about some of the herbs you talk. In the traditional context, you are very familiar with them, but for a European official sitting on a desk, he has never heard of them. So how can he judge them? Then we have the problem of multi-compound formulations. Authorities are used to single compound formulas, although they don't know. Then they want structured information on the product. They want a clear labeling on the box, which an ordinary consumer can read. And for them, a traditional description, as we hear about Loom, Tripa, Becken, is for them esoteric. They have no clue about the Tibetan traditional concept. And so it's for them, they want to have a translation, a transformation of this information. And then there's an assumption that is definitely not an official statement, but we should put the question also on the topic. We could discuss it. Is it also a strategy from the developed countries to keep Asian products, traditional products, out of the market? So all these different regulatory aspects are mixed together when we confront an authority with Tibetan medicine, with a traditional medicine. So there is no clear answer, but it's also not a clear borderline, but I think this very nicely sums this up. Then there is a difference. Are traditional medicines considered a food or a medicine? A food is not intended to treat a medical condition. So later on we hear maybe about the beverages, which are, or this is from the well-being side. That's not a medical condition. But if we talk about medical conditions and complementary alternative treatment, so also Tibetan medicine, some authorities say, oh, traditional medicine is generally herbs are food. This is generally speaking the situation in the United States where herbs are generally considered as dietary supplements. In Europe, the situation is more mixed. You see also countries colored in red, and those countries generally consider traditional herbal medicines as pharmaceutical products, as medicines. And we are in a discussion in Europe, where will the future be? And my assumption is that if you want to have a claim and efficacy for an herb or herbal formulation, then it will be considered a medicine in Europe in the future. But it's not a fixed, it's just a developing thing. And those countries which have the stripes in it, they are not quite clear about it. And this is also, those countries colored, also those countries where we can sell our products from partner company. Then the whole thing of pharmaceutical GMP quality control. Of course, GMP is in force in Europe. GLP, good agricultural practice, or GACP, cultivation practice. I don't want to go into the GMP issue. That would be a whole thing to needs another. I don't even think it's one lecture. It needs another 100 lectures. Then challenges. Then you have done all this. Then you want to register. And below you see the file you have to present when you want to register a formula in Switzerland. So it's about 20 round files full of documentation, scientific documentation. So it needs about a year or 2 years to compile all this information. And it's then reviewed, and usually it comes back after 1 or 2 years. After reviewing, it comes back with a list of mistakes or errors that you have made, and you need another 2-3 years to file the whole thing again. So it really is time intensive. It needs a lot of resources. Of course, in the background, again, this GMP production, and also the cost of registration is immense. You have always to think that our company is a small company, so the cost of registration, which add up to several hundred thousand dollars, is substantial. So we cannot just do one formula after the other. So it needs really to think about the investment. That was Switzerland, but it's even worse in the European Union. The European Union is now comprises 27 member states. Almost all of Central Europe except Switzerland. which is an island within the European Union, and there it's almost not possible to register traditional Asian medical products because there is a new directive in force, the directive 2001/83. You need 15 years of traditional use in the EU. So how can something new from Asia come into Europe? Because first you have to have the 15 years, but when you never were there, how can you get the proof that you were 15 years in Europe? And we have also then the interesting fact that Switzerland is not in the EU, so even if we use the formula in Switzerland, we didn't use it in the European Union. So it's full of interesting things. Also, on the global level, maybe this also a political statement, that Tibetan medicine is not recognized on an international level. Tibet is not a state, so we miss that Tibetan medicine, and I think also not Bhutanese medicine so far, is not in the list of traditional medicines, at least when I look at the dossier of the WHO. And this is also a problem for the European officials, because when they say, what are you talking about, Tibetan medicine, I have no idea, where can I look it up? And an official always likes to look up in official sources. So if we don't have the name, so we have even the problem of naming the thing. Bit of our, now you know how the situation is in Europe, what are we doing at PADMA, just that you, for those who are not familiar with our company, what we do, that a quick overview. This year we have 40 years of PADMA, so the company was already founded 1969, and why 40 years ago? Here you see the Swiss beginnings, 1965. I was in kindergarten then, so I can only also look in the archive and look at this. So these were the first transcripts of Tibetan formulas. And how did the Tibetan formulas come to Switzerland? And now we see two movements come together in Switzerland at the same time in the 1960s. The one is this historic process of the movement to the north from Tibetan medicine to Siberia, Buryatia, from there to St. Petersburg, Warsaw, and during the time of the Cold War to Zurich, to Switzerland, which was a neutral safe haven at this time. And at the same time, the Tibetan refugees, the immigration started to Zurich, and still in Europe we have the biggest Tibetan expat community in Europe. So about 3,000 Tibetans live in Switzerland. And by some coincidence, or if there exist coincidences, both movements came to Switzerland at the same time. And this maybe was also the catalyst for this, for the formation of the company. What we do, raw material, here you see some cultivations of plants that grow in Switzerland. I inserted this, we do not use high Himalayan herbs because of the panel that we had yesterday, because I think that was a very important statement. I think for the rich Europeans and Americans, it's not necessary to use our good money, and because we could buy everything. It's not a problem to put a lot of money on the table, and you get even the most endangered species, but then we should never talk about sustainability or anything else again. So we try really to use so-called market herbs that are easily available, or even that we can grow. We try to get as close to the growers as can be. Of course, closest we are in Switzerland, and here you see organic farming in Switzerland. Then GMP production, here you see all the stainless steel equipment, which is also necessary, hygienic things. Quality assurance, also very important. This is the most expensive part of production. Quality, identity, and purity. Especially the purity is a big concern for us. There are a lot of heavy metals, pesticides, and so on. Even from products from Asia or even organic grown things are sometimes contaminated. Here the range of our products. Our main product is PADMA 28, or in some countries we have to call it PADMA Basic. Then the PADMA Lux is the oldest product we have. It's on the market since 1970 in Switzerland. That's a Shiche formula. PADMA 28 is a Gabur formula. And also a comment about yesterday, and we do not and did not patent the formulas or herbs. I think in Europe it's especially very complicated. The European patent system is not so flexible or not so friendly to the companies as the American patent law, so it's even not possible to patent a traditional formula. But as you see then later also with the scientific research, I believe very strong we have to publish findings about Tibetan medicine, because this is the main chance to prevent patenting. And here you see a pharmacy in Switzerland and how our products blend in. So you, of course, we have to compete. That is also a fact. We have to compete on the marketplace. The last 5 minutes is just a short excursion to our medical work. We do clinical trials. We do retrospective studies with Western doctors, experimental studies, in vitro studies, and so on and so on. Most data on the whole formula. We don't break it up, and most data on the formula PADMA 28. I don't have time to go on the details of the research, but you see I could now add a biomedical research lecture into this lecture. Here is some from clinical studies. We even did a meta-analysis. Here you see this placebo control. So it even works in this context. Even in the reduced context, I'm very confident Tibetan medicine is working. That doesn't mean it's the best way to testing it, but I think it's very assuring that it has the power to act even in this reduced reductionist environment. That's a message I want to give you. For me, it's a very positive message. I don't want to go into this because the last minutes I want to give for the strategies. I think there are three strategies or three options I want to give you which we could discuss. The one is the research and publish scientific results. Here's a collection of the research papers that we publish in conventional biomedical journals. We see it as our task to bring the name Tibetan medicine into the mainstream medicine. Some of those guys never heard the name Tibetan medicine, traditional medicine. They think all this is voodoo or quack. Here you have this evidence-based pyramid, and for conventional doctors or in this field of research, we are just all we are doing here is just the opinion of experts. It's nothing more than what we do. So we have to do studies to come into the journals, and also because we need the it has this feedback to the patent issue. Once it's published, you cannot patent a published result. Here, a quick overview. When you search in the biomedical literature, what is published on Tibetan medicine, if you make a search on Tibetan medicine with all the different acronyms, you get a total, look just at the right column, that's 81, so it's 120 publications, and of them are about 80 on pharmacognosy and single plants, mainly published from mainland China. Then are 14, the yellow ones, publications, scientific publications by others, and I would say 30 of the clinical research papers not dealing with plants, so that is not, the blue ones are just with single plants, but from the research done on Tibetan herbal formulas, 30 are done by our group or influenced at least from our work. So I would say almost compare the 14 to the 30, so we still do most of the biomedical research on Tibetan medicine. That doesn't say we have to be the only one. I encourage everybody who is able to do it to contribute to increase this column. If you compare it with Chinese medicine, you would have to add at least a factor of 10 or even 50. So you would have to see there about 1,000 publications. Then we have to do regulatory work. We have to start building confidence at the regulatory authorities that Tibetan medicine is also worth to consider in Switzerland, in the European Union. Here I think Brian Sweeney has also a talk in one of the other panels on the regulatory situation. And that means work on the political level, which means lobbying. So in the last years I turned out to be a lobbyist for Tibetan medicine. I consider at least myself one. Science is not anymore the most important thing. Politics now plays the game, and we have to get opportunity that the officials know what we are doing when we talk about Tibetan medicine. And of course, it means practical work. We have to do registration. And finally, we have also to foster the education of those who are interested in Tibetan medicine. I even say here, education of Tibetan doctors in Europe. I would very much like to see this. We have here the center of Dharamsala in Hüttenberg in Austria, of the Menzikang. We have Dr. Chenak Tsang in Italy and Austria. And then we have Dr. Loksang Shestra from Barcelona. He also gives courses in Switzerland. And then Pasang Yonten, who does courses in Italy and Germany. So these are the schools that surround us. And we hope that more practitioners or Western doctors get the education in Tibetan medicine. That's it. Thank you very much. On the one hand, it's a very good question, thank you. I think, first of all, you have to see that some of the studies were already done in the 80s. So what we talk today is also we have now different knowledge, as was done already in the we had, or those who did these studies in the 1990s or 1980s. And the other thing is we are now trying to make a Tibetan questionnaire, validated questionnaire, and that's the problem of in the time frame, because you need to validate a questionnaire before you can use it, which we can use then in accordance with the clinical outcomes, so that we have questions of Tibetan from the Tibetan medical system, which would characterize the energetic status and so on, in addition with the biomedical concept. But let's face it, the authorities in Europe are only interested in the hard evidence. Whatever we say, again, is a legend, or we can add as much material as we like, but the thing that's really important is either the practical thing, it's the outcome of a research in hard facts, in some quantitative measure, or it's then also that we had here before, these are all experimental findings on cellular models with the Tibetan formula in the disease process. So this is where they are interested. And even if we have so much data, the authorities say, oh, that's not enough, you have to do another study. You know, there's all these games of prolonging the process. So it's a bit like in a fairy tale. The more you do, the fairy queen says you have to do more and you have to come again.
I'm Dorje Rathen. I'm from the Center for Tibetan Medicine. And I'd like to thank you personally for, you know, many of our strategies and policy issues have been very well explained by you also. We have the same concern. But big portion, you know, I would like to, you know, highlight here is that, you know, if we really wanted to have the Tibetan medicines accessible to the people in the West or abroad, we have to follow all these stringent kind of, you know, the measures, and which we find really very difficult. For example, for any of our herbal formulations to be proved scientifically, it has to follow the strict, you know, the biomedicine reductionist method. Which, you know, for us, our Tibetan medicine works, you know, holistically. Each of the herbal formulations are explained, you know, through their, you know, taste potencies. And each of the, you know, taste potencies of this, you know, the single kind of plants, and comes a lot. But if you really have to go through these stringent measures, none of the Tibetan formulations could be, you know, the researched, could be accepted, or could be copied. So problem, this is a big problem which we have, and we were really trying to find out a solution. We used to ask of our, you know, senior physician, former, you know, the physicians who his holiness in the Dalai Lama to raise introducts. And our senior physician used to tell us that, well, don't bother about the research. You know, people will speak. When the people get benefited, when they are feeling better, they will speak. You know? So we are, in a one way, we are also trying to see, you know, a kind of, you know, the support by the people who are using Tibetan medicines. So that is probably maybe one, you know, the maybe one way of reaching the Tibetan medicines to the mainstream science, you know, scientific. So another thing is that, you know, central council of Tibetan medicine is also trying to find out the, you know, very let's say good collaborators. You know, we have been looking, you know, of course with the advice of from even His Holiness Dalai Lama, that we need to do a research, scientific research, collaborative kind of clinical research. For that, we are always looking for, you know, good collaborators. And especially one of the best example of the good collaborators is Padma AG. So we are also looking for, you know, to the help of Padma AG in especially doing some interesting clinical research on the efficacy of the Tibetan medicine against many major diseases like cancer, even diabetes. Of course, we did several, even Tibetan Medical Institute in Dharamsala did clinical research on the diabetes, on the hypertension, on the cancers. Results are very, very promising, but we have not been really able to present in a very, what do you call it, scientific, you know, the kind of presentations or whatever. So for that, we need the, you know, the support of the institutions or company like yours, so that at least, you know, from all the kind of directions, we move forward, so that whatever we have been dreaming about, you know, the kind of making this Tibetan medicine accessible to the rest of the world will be fulfilled. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I think you're right, and therefore I said I only can say something about Europe, and I would not recommend that you change your system here in order to fulfill crazy demands in Europe or in America. But I live in Europe, so I work there, so that's my job to do there, and you do yours here very good. So, and with communication, maybe we can bring something to our countries. But at the same time, what you said, and this was my last point, also is we go into politics. We did in Switzerland, for example, exactly out of this motivation we had this year, and I was working very hard personally for this referendum. We had the democracy of Switzerland is quite special because it's direct democracy. And we had this year a voting about amending the constitution of Switzerland to include complementary medicine into the healthcare. And we rallied for this referendum, and we got almost two-thirds of yes for amending the constitution. So I think we're the first country worldwide where complementary medicine is in the constitution. But at the same time, some people ask me, and what has this to do? Why do you invest your work into this? What has this to do with Tibetan medicine? So you see, this is a very broad field. And we need to continue and to work, I think, more on this. It's not a 20-minute thing to cover the whole thing.
You know, we necessarily don't have to follow all the stringent measures. I really look forward to the support of all those who are interested in Tibetan medicines. I mean, who have been really genuinely studying Tibetan medicines, so that how best, you know, we should work
also,
you know, how best the interest of Tibetan medicine would be served?
In the interest of